Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. Joining me for our final episode of the year is paediatric anaesthetic radiation oncology clinical nurse specialist in St. Luke's Hospital, Rathgar, Adele Tevlin. And it's made even more poignant as we record on Adele's final week in work before her retirement. Adele was the first paediatric nurse in St. Luke's and will retire this December. After a long nursing career and 8 years in the role, St. Luke's is the National Radiotherapy Centre. Approximately 50% of children diagnosed with cancer will require radiotherapy, and those aged around 2 to 4 would need a general anaesthetic for every radiotherapy session because they have to stay still. Adele plays an advisory and a support role as well as medical, while liaising with Crumlin and other hospitals. Families come every day for periods of time, so she gets to know the families and the siblings very well. We talk about her career and what brought her to St. Luke's, how meaningful it is to connect with and support the families, about the special play areas for children, and the knitted crocheted blankets every child receives, thanks to Friends of St. Luke's. We would like to wish Adele every thanks for her service and a long and happy retirement. And to you all listening, we hope this podcast has supported you this year. Thank you to our guests for sharing their personal stories, and to you all listening for being here. Adele, you are so welcome onto Gold Ribbon Conversations. And may I start by saying congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you, Sinead. Yes, this is my final week of working in St. Luke's, my final week in my nursing career. And yes, I'm very happy to retire. I feel I've put in a lot of years and now it's time to enjoy the rest of my life.
How many years have you been working?
Well, I started nursing in 1980, so I suppose I'd have just over 40 years in my nursing career. I didn't work full-time for all that time. I took some time out when I had the children, but yes, I suppose my nursing career spans over 43 years.
So it's a lifetime. It's such a long time. And no doubt you have seen immense change in that period of time.
Yes, well, I have from the time I started up until now. I suppose the biggest change would be in technology and also in the outcome of diseases of children, of childhood and the advancement in medicine. Yes, it has been huge. It has been huge. There's no doubt about it.
Tell me, what is the role of working with children with cancer in St. Luke's meant to you? And am I right in saying that kind of kicked up towards the latter part of your working career about 8 years ago?
That's right. I'm in St. Luke's for the last 8 years. Before that, I worked in Crumlin for most of my nursing career. what brought me to St. Luke's is over the years, some of the children that attend St. Luke's need a general anaesthetic because they're too young to lie still. I'm talking about children maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years of age. There's no expectation that they'd be able to lie still for the radiotherapy, so they have to have a general anaesthetic. And at the time, I was working in the anaesthetic department in the theatre in Crumlin, and St. Luke's had an arrangement with Crumlin that a nurse would go over to assist the consultant anaesthetist there. And it was arranged that they do it on their day off or on their annual leave, because obviously Crumlin couldn't release staff over every day. So I started off by doing that. And then St. Luke's decided that they would employ a person full-time, and that they would be in sight and they would be looking after all the children that came to have radiotherapy. So when I was working in theatre in the anaesthetic department, part of our job was that we were on call. So it got to the stage that jumping out of bed at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning to go into an emergency, I decided that those days were coming to an end. There was a job in St. Luke's. It was Monday to Friday. There was no weekends. There was no bank holidays. There was no on call. So it was an easy decision to make. And I thought, right, I'll go for this. And I started my work over there then at St. Luke's.
A happy transition?
Yes, yes. It was very happy. And from the time I went over, I settled in very quickly. I loved the patients and the parents, the interaction with them. It was a lovely place to work. It was much smaller than so from Crumlin. Crumlin, being an acute hospital 24/7, is very busy, and St. Luke's hasn't got an A&E. It's a Monday to Friday, so it would certainly be a much calmer environment to work in than the busyness of Crumlin or Temple Street or an acute hospital. I settled in very quickly, as I say, and I just loved it. I loved the daily interaction with the children. I loved that I could build up a rapport with them, because when they came, they needed to come back day after day, and I met them day after day. I got to know the parents. I got to know the grannies, the siblings. And yes, it was great. It was great.
I often hear, when I do talk to those that have given their careers and their professions to fighting cancer, there is a special bond between you and the parents that you meet along the way, children that you meet along the way. You do meet them at quite a vulnerable part of their life, and having that kind of warmth when they walk through the doors and a familiar face can really be something that is profoundly comforting.
Yes, yes, from the start, I meet them, and then they say, right, this is my person in St. Luke's. And that is very reassuring for parents, that they know if they need anything, they have a number and they know who they can call. If they have a problem, if they have some query for the doctor, they know that if they ask me, that I'll be there and I can get the answer for them. The children that come over to us, I'd kind of say there are two types, or types isn't the right word, but we get children over, and they could be well and truly into their treatment when they come to St. Luke's. So they might have been in Crumlin, they might have had a biopsy, they might have surgery, they have chemotherapy, they have lost their hair, they have a Broviac. So these young children, to me, these are the experts. These know it all. they come and they know that they have to have their Broviax dressing change. They know that they have to have their bloods taken. You come and you guide them through having an anaesthetic every day. And initially they're a bit apprehensive, but come day 3, 4, 5, they are running down the corridor. They're going in on their parents' lap. They're handing their Broviax to the anaesthetist and supervising while he's giving the medication. And they're not really traumatized by it. They settle into it very, very quickly, and the parents settle into it very quickly because they have been through so much that this is something, it's not easy, but it's doable. And you're there and you'd say, you know, we've got this, we can do this together. And they do it. And the resilience and the strength of the children and the parents, it never fails to amaze me that they're running families, they have children at home, they have husbands, they're trying to bring children to school, and they do it, and they're so grateful for what we do for them. And it's just, they're amazing. They are absolutely amazing. And here they are setting up charities and organizations to help each other, which is just great. They have so much going on in their own lives, and yet they have so much to share with others. And parents come and they'd say, oh, you're Edel, yes, the parents before said you'd be here. And you know, they look after each other so well.
Such a unique experience. It's no doubt so bonding. Only those that understand it are those that have lived it.
Yeah. So that would be one group of parents. Then another group would be the parents that have been in Temple Street that have been diagnosed with a tumour on their brain. And these parents, they have attended a doctor or a local hospital with something that they'd say, we better get this investigated. And the next thing, they're in Crumlin, they're in front of an oncologist being told that they have a brain tumour. They're with Dr. Taffy. I heard you speak with Dr. Taffy before, to hear that, oh yes, you have to go to surgery, you have to have a biopsy, you have a tumour, you have to have it removed. They have the surgery, and then the next thing, oh yes, we have to go to St. Luke's for some radiotherapy. And all that can happen in a very, very short period of time. So the other children and parents, when I say that they're experts and in the system and take to it easy, these parents come and they are what I say, they're like rabbits in the headlights. They are, you're speaking to them and they are, you know that they're taking in some, but they're not taking in an awful lot. You look and you see, oh my goodness, these parents, they're so pale, they haven't slept. You can see the worry and the anxiety in their faces. So these are the parents that would need an awful lot of care and support. And we've a big team, and we do look after them. We have a dedicated social worker, Aoife. We have a psychonc, Brendan and Nikki, that looks after them. We have a pain control team, and we have our nursing staff and doctors. And we do our best, and we support them to get them through this period of their treatment. They come and before they arrive, I would have been in contact with Miriam, a clinical nurse specialist in Temple Street, and she would tell the story, and she would say, you know, this little child is coming over, and it's the youngest of a family, or it's an only child, and it's a single parent, or they might be a non-national that might need an interpreter, or they've been only diagnosed. And she kind of fills you in the social and the dynamics of the family. So when they come, I have a rough idea what they need before they get there and what we can do to support the family. Sometimes it's just the practicalities. Well, they're having their scan. They'll be back to us with the turnaround of the span. The doctors work on that and it happens very quickly. And they could be back starting their treatment, excuse me, maybe within 2 weeks. And they could be scheduled for 30 sessions and a family attending every day for 30 sessions, that is a huge commitment and can be a huge challenge for families. Especially if they're not living in Dublin. So if they're in Cork or Galway, St. Luke's is the national centre for radiation oncology. So it's actually the only centre. So every child in Ireland that needs radiotherapy has to go there. So you're talking about a family, maybe from Cork or Galway. Do the two parents come up with that child and leave the other children at home with a granny? Does one come up and one stay at home? Does the whole family move up into Ronald McDonald or a home from home accommodation? So all this is going on with their head in their heads, and it has happened within the space of maybe 1 or 2 weeks. Just invariably, one of the parents has to give up a job because they can't hold down two jobs, and one child in Dublin, one not in Dublin. So there's an awful lot going on for them when they do come to us, you know.
Will you light up our gold ribbon tree this Christmas? Please join us in remembering our loved ones who were taken too soon, or send a message of love and hope to families who are still fighting and survivors who are dealing with the long-term effects of treatment. Make a donation on our virtual tree at goldribbontree.ie and leave a donation if you wish. Our work at Childhood Cancer Ireland is only possible because of generous donations from people like you. You can help by sharing this podcast and by texting GOLD to 50300 and donating €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more.
Such a special opportunity to be present for them, to witness that. I'm sure it has an impact on your own life. I'm sure it's hard to switch off from and just get your shift over with and kind of return back to normal life. How have you done that in your whole career?
Well, the way I look at it is that my children, I have young adult children, and I have been so lucky that I have not been affected by childhood cancer. I have my children or my nieces or nephews, and I just feel so lucky. And now I'm in a position and I'm so privileged to be the ones that can look after these parents. I'm also so lucky in the sense that I have the time to do it. In an acute hospital, there's so many children and there's so much work to be done. In St. Luke's, we wouldn't have the same numbers of children going through our hands as they would in Crumlin. But having said that, there mightn't be a lot of numbers, but they do come often. We might have a child coming for a scan and then 30 sessions. So it might be only one child, but they could be with us 31 times. So when the children, especially the children with the brain tumours, when they come and they have got that devastating diagnosis, you're empathetic and they are so distraught. I feel that I don't afford myself the luxury of sitting down and crying with them. You'd like to, you feel like crying with them, but they are there, and what they want from you is someone that can get them through their treatment, that are there for them, that are an advocate for them. And that's what I have to do. And of course it affects me. Of course I think about the children and about the families, and you go home and you think, oh my goodness, so how do they do it? But you go in the next day and they need to know that this woman knows what she's about. She is there to help me. She will get me through this, and I will, and that's my job.
Feels less like a job in the traditional sense. and more like something that you're meant to do. Just,
yeah.
Nursing is often not just a choice. It's who you are.
Well, yes, I suppose nurses, by nature, they're caring, and that's what they do. They go in and they're there to help people, and they want to help people. They want to be advocates for their patients, and I get such satisfaction out of my job. I love my job. I like to be able to say at the end of the day or at the end of a patient's treatment that I made a difference to them, and I hope I did. That's just, I'm just talking personally. I mean, obviously, my colleagues, it's not just me in St. Luke's, you know. I work alongside all the other multidisciplinary and the radiation therapists. They're absolutely fantastic. The children come, and they, once we hear that there is a child coming over, they just make a slot to have the CT within a day or two, and they just always seem to fit the children in. And when they come, they spend so long on their first treatment, and it takes as long as it takes. A child can be a little bit apprehensive and frightened, and they mightn't just go and lie on a treatment bed straight away, but they're so good and they're so experienced. They've been looking after children for years, so they just give the time, and the parents and the children get a confidence in them, and they just treat them, and it's great, and they know the next day it's going to be easier, and then they're a dab hand by the end of their treatment.
Tell me about the crocheted blankets.
Oh, right. Yes, well, in particular at the time of COVID, we sent out word to anyone that had a granny or a mammy, or people were at home, they were isolated, and we thought, right, if they have nothing to do, and we sent a request and asked if anybody could crochet or knit blankets for the children. When the children are having treatment, obviously they have to put out their tummies, if that's where we're giving the radiotherapy, to expose it. So we put little blankets on them, to keep them warm, and also hats. A lot of the children come and they have lost their hair and they're bald. So while they're lying on the table, we put the little crochet hats on them. So we give it to them at the start on the first day, so that when they wake up, they have this blanket and they're comforted by it, and they come back the next day and they have the blanket. Sometimes they bring it home with them and bring it back in, but that's how the blankets came about. So we have a great selection, and at the end, if they like to bring them home, they bring them home. So it was really people giving up their time during the COVID and before, and even before. There were certain ladies, and they used to send them in beautifully knitted or crocheted blankets. Yeah.
It's such a lovely initiative, though, to get people to do something so beautiful and what's so meaningful for them as well. As you said, if they have the time, have they continued to do it past COVID?
Some have, yes, yeah, a few, but it was mostly during the COVID. But we have a selection. We have a huge selection that'll do for many a long time. There was one lady in particular, and she used to knit and send in six or seven at a time. So we have a good press full, plenty to keep us going.
Do the children grow to see comfort in them?
Yes, I think they do. And the smaller ones in the buggy, they might, when they wake up after having their anaesthetic and they're recovered, get into the buggy, and they might put their hands up looking for the blanket to go around them and bring it in the car. And if they're going home at the weekends, they bring them with them too, and then bring them back on a Monday. And sometimes they like them and come back and they're looking for another one. But I think they're a great source of comfort. And, I suppose they wake up and they have them. So they kind of everything that they're doing, kind of the continuity is reassuring, and it's the same every day. They're meeting the same same people. Myself and my colleague Marie, she's the oncology nurse that looks after the children as well. So they come and they run into you. We have a lovely playroom that was opened in 2016. It was funded by past pupils and the Friends of St. Luke's, and it's really a fabulous playroom. It has everything in it. There's a kitchen that the girls are inclined to like, and they go and they make tea and coffee and toast in it. And now it's a play kitchen, obviously. And the boys, and there's an electric car, and there's little bicycles, and they've been known to go out and go down for their treatment on these things. And you're there trying to watch the ankles of the adults that as they go flying down the corridor. We also have an adolescent room, and that's where the older children go in, and there's a PS4 and a Xbox, but invariably they just go on their phones. But it's a space where they can go, and this is where the children, when they come in the morning, they go and they stay there while until they're called for treatment. And another aspect of it is initially it was built as it was recognised that the children sitting out with the adult patients wasn't ideal. So it was somewhere, it was like a holding bay for them. But on the other hand, what we found is that it was helpful, because when the adults were waiting to have their treatment and the children were there, if they were having a bad day or not feeling well, it used to upset them to see the children, and they kind of thought, oh, I feel so awful, but look at that poor little child. So it kind of, it worked both ways, that it was good for the children to be there, and in some ways it was good that the adults didn't have to be feeling upset looking at them. And it's like when you were speaking one of the other podcasts to Connie, and Connie's in Our Lady of Lourdes, Drogheda, and she spoke to that they had a room dedicated to the children coming in, and it has toys in it, and it has vinyl wallpaper with child friendly characters on it. And of course, in a general hospital, which Our Lady of Lourdes is, and which Luke's is, there has to be somewhere. It has to be, it has to be recognised and identified that children are children. They're not small adults. They need an area that they can stay in, that they can feel safe in. Not sitting with adults, because they have totally different needs, you know. So that's what the playroom and the adolescent room was about.
Talk to me about the adolescents in particular. From the conversations that I've had that have focused on adolescents, it does seem like a particularly tricky transition.
Yeah, I would have to say dealing with the teenagers and the young adults, it is more challenging. The children, the children, you know, they come in and they want to play, and they can be distracted, and they kind of trust you, and if you say things, you know, they believe you. The teenagers, you know, with social media now, and with the access to Google and that, they're looking up things, and they but they're not going to talk to you about their diagnosis and their prognosis, but you know they are looking up their condition, and they don't really want to speak to you about it. They come in, they don't even want to engage with you, really. the teenagers, I'm sure they say, oh, here she comes again. She's going to be asking me now, have I any pain, and am I eating? And, you know, these questions, and they go on their phones, they come in. into the adolescent room, they go on the phone, they're on TikTok, they're on to their friends, they go down and they have the treatment and they go. We offer the service to the counselling service and they open up maybe to the counsellor and that, but they're not, my experience is they're not likely to sit down and confide with you, really. They're a difficult group to deal with and to get into their heads. They do listen and take on board what you're saying, and you kind of have to have the conversation now that, you know, there's a likelihood that you're going to, if they have a brain tumor and we're treating their head, that they are going to lose their hair, and then the next thing they might come in with a buzz cutter, with having their hair shaved and with the baseball cap. Yeah. So, when talking to them, we kind of advise that they, you know, they keep up their contact with their friends, which is very important for them. And some of the children, if they're in Dublin, the teenagers, they decide to go into school. They might go into the school during the day, and then in the afternoon, just come and have their treatment, and the radiation therapists are happy to schedule their radiotherapy around that, especially if they're in exams here, if they're coming up to doing their junior or their leaving cert. And it's important that they keep up all of those routines of going into school. Some of them then, they mightn't be able to play their games, but they go off to the matches, and you just talk to them like that and say, you know, it's important that you keep doing all the things that you like, your friends, and the girls, if they like to get their friends over, and because they will talk to their friends, and the parents sometimes find it hard with speaking to the teenagers and trying to ask them how they're feeling and are they getting on all right, and you know they kind of they don't open up is what I'm trying to say, and sometimes going out, the parents might hear through a sibling, you know, how the actual patient is doing. They might, you know, if they're at home and they're talking to their the siblings or their pals, you might find out more about what's going on in their heads, you know.
How does it feel to be finishing?
I suppose I've mixed feelings about it. I will miss having children in my life because I've been looking after them for so long. I'll miss all my colleagues and I have made friends and I still have friends going back 20 and 30 years. But I am looking forward to not having to get up on a Monday morning and face into a week of work. I'm looking forward to doing other things when you're working full time, you don't have time to do, to catch up with your friends, to spend time with your family, to do hobbies. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to all of that.
It must be a very strange week to begin that process of handing over and saying goodbye.
Yeah, it is. It's difficult, and it doesn't really dawn on you. Maybe next Monday when I don't have to get up, I'll say, right, OK, this is it. This is the first day of the rest of my life. But yes, it is. But, you know, it's time to I feel it's time for me now to give up. I've put in the years, and I think it's time to retire and do a bit of travel and enjoy my life.
Maybe take up some crochet.
Well, don't think that'll happen, but maybe.
Where are you going in the new year?
I'm traveling in the new year. I'm going to Australia for a few weeks to visit my daughter. So I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's a good time to retire. I have Christmas, that'll keep me busy. And then I'll be on a plane going to Sydney.
When was the last time you saw her?
In May. Yeah.
But you get to go and visit her life and see all the things, the exciting things that she's up to.
Exactly. Yes, that's it. And to see, well, where she's living, if she's, you know, that she's settled in, that she has a job, and just to see that the life, and have some sunshine.
Yeah, we should say you absolutely deserve 40 years. Is that what you said?
Yeah, a few decades. Yeah,
it's an amazing legacy and an amazing use of those years that you could put towards caring and helping the families and the children, especially in the last 8 years in St. Luke's. No doubt the connections that you've made and the compassion you've shown to these patients along the journey has had lasting ripple effect as they have navigated some of the worst days of their lives. It makes absolute sense for me, having met you now, that you were in that role, that you were in that position. Because if anybody was to walk through the door, what you want to meet is you or somebody like you who can be so caring and compassionate and so experienced, you know, so experienced in your role. And so therefore could be completely trusted to help any parent through that. No doubt it had its dark days for you too. It's very, very hard to live knowing what people are going through and the pain that they're experiencing and kind of return back to normal life. I think you might have to write a book for us all in figuring out how to do that.
Well, it's been my, I feel very privileged to have been able to go into the lives of children, especially in the last 8 years. And I was very lucky that I had the time to spend with them. Hopefully I did have some impact and helped them along their way at some of the, you know, darkest days, and also through the happy days when the outcome was very good.
That's it. You've seen what can happen with the right treatment, and that can give you hope and give everybody else hope that are coming through the doors. Thank you for giving me your time today on this last week of work. You said when we spoke, we had a quick phone call during the week, and you said you're not fully retired until this podcast is finished.
That's it, yeah. So, well, thank you, Sinead, and thank you for all you do to help the parents and for the awareness of what they go through, and that there are people there and that they will get them through their treatment.
Consider yourself officially retired.
Pardon?
Consider yourself officially retired.
Oh, yes, indeed. This is it. I'm done.
Thank you so much for the 40 years and for this final little cherry on top of your career. We appreciate you and everything that you've done.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.